Donald Trump wreaking havoc in Washington, D.C., vetoing a defense bill and not approving the stimulus bill either. Plus, can Chipotle make its employees take the vaccine? Chipotle or any other company for that matter. We will talk about that one. And the biggest feud in Silicon Valley, it's Apple versus Facebook. This is the Market Wake Up by Yahoo Finance. I'm Andy Serwer, along with Emily McCormick and Javier David. So, Emily, Donald Trump, true to form, not going down quietly. This is sort of the end of the lame duck session here, but he definitely put his stamp on things by rejecting the defense bill and actually setting up a showdown with Senate Republicans. There's a lot at stake here, right?
Absolutely, Andy. And President Donald Trump is actually heading towards his first veto override of his presidency, assuming that the House of Representatives and the Senate come back together before the end of the year and actually do vote to override this veto. And essentially what had happened earlier this week was that the House and the Senate did pass that $740 billion defense spending bill, but importantly, they did so with veto-proof majorities. So again, likely here that we are going to get an override by the end of December. Now, taking a look here at some of Trump's grievances, he'd really cited a number of provisions that he'd taken issue with already and had voiced his concern over for the past month now. I mean, a part of that had been the fact that he wanted this bill to include a provision to roll back Section 230. That's actually a legal shield for social media companies like Facebook and Twitter, but also other online publishers, really providing them protections from liability in terms of what their users actually post on their pages. So that's something that actually Republican and Democratic lawmakers had said shouldn't be going into this bill, given that it really is beyond the purview of the Department of Defense. I mean, this is really more of an FCC and a communications issue. And then another thing that President Trump had cited as an issue was that one of the provisions would allow the military to remove names of Confederate leaders from military bases. So that, too, is something that Trump has had a longstanding issue with as part of this bill. But again, it is looking like this is going to be a veto that the House and the Senate are able to override. But one of the big headlines that we saw coming out yesterday, just because it would be the first time that this happened during the Trump presidency.
So there are a number of things I think that are happening here. The first is the New York Times had a great sort of TikTok, a behind the scenes look at the president's final days in office. He's unhappy, unleashed, and unpredictable, the story says. I think in a lot of ways we are looking at a president who, you know, is a chaos agent, and he always has been. I think that the stimulus in particular is one area in which he is showing his penchant for being really chaotic, unpredictable, erratic. The stimulus, as we've discussed ad infinitum here on the show, is something that has been in the works for months and really should have been resolved at the end of the summer. An embattled incumbent who was teetering on the brink of losing the White House and really needed something to take to the voters really could have and should have nailed this down, because in a lot of ways, he's not wrong. People were really insulted and upset about the $600 additional stimulus payment that was really viewed as insufficient and kind of a slap in the face of people that have really been suffering over the last several months. So in one way, he had his finger on the pulse of the public, in which he rightly called out Congress for a paltry payment and wanted more money. The problem is this should have taken place at latest in August, because he should have gone into September and campaigned on this. Instead, he's waited until the election has pretty much been certified. We're now less than a month away from inauguration. And he's, you know, all agitated about something that honestly is too little too late. Like at this particular stage, the die's been cast, the train has left the station, it's barreling down the tracks, and there's really no way to hit the brake. So on one level, I think that Speaker Pelosi is leveraging what she believes is an issue that will divide the Republicans, because I think the Republicans are probably pretty irritated by the fact that he's thrown this monkey, this spanner into the works. But at the same time, he's not wrong. There are a lot of people on both sides of this argument that were really insulted by what was ultimately produced in this stimulus package. So the president, in one way, he probably had the public on his side, but now people are expecting at least something by the end of the year, and they may not get it. So whether or not this is him just sort of threatening to veto, or is he's just expressing his disapproval and will sign it anyway, is anyone's guess. But at the same time, it all comes back to the fact that this is too little, too late, and it's the die seems to have been cast, and it just complicates what has already been an unnecessarily complicated, long-winded process that has not produced the result that it should have had.
All good points, Javier. And I think to bring it back to the markets and investors, what I think was interesting in yesterday's session was even with the threat of Trump vetoing the stimulus package in its current form, we actually saw the three major indices hold up pretty strongly. And what strategists and analysts really said is that investors perhaps shouldn't worry about this threat from Trump, at least in the near term, because there's really only one of two and maybe three outcomes here. I mean, in one case, he could delay the passage of this $900 billion bill by a month, at least until President-elect Joe Biden is inaugurated. Otherwise, we could actually see that his demands are met and that the House and the Senate convene to approve the passage of a larger round of stimulus checks. And then third, of course, there is that option that Congress does fall back into more disagreements during this additional buffer time that we have now with Trump not signing the bill into law just yet. But again, for now, at least Wall Street seems to still be focused on this next round of $900 billion in the stimulus package and assumes that this will ultimately go through.
Yeah, that's right, Emily. And the defense stocks did not fall on the news yesterday. And the social media stocks did not fall on the news yesterday. Twitter was a little bit weak, but it didn't move the stock, this news. And it's a far cry from the early days of the Trump presidency when he would strike fear in CEOs' hearts by tweeting something out and, oh, would tank the stock. I think that maybe this is kind of, you know, where he's ended up a little bit. I should also point out that Yahoo is protected by Section 230 as well, just full disclosure there. And getting back to your point, Javier, is there a method to the madness here with the president? Some have even connected his veto of the DOD bill and his rejection of stimulus as sort of using one as leverage against the other. I don't really know. And, you know, just one last quick point on Section 230. I think there is objection to Section 230, which, again, protects the social media companies on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans. But this is not the time or the place, I think, lawmakers think, to address that problem. And Trump is wrapping it up in the flag of national security, saying that, oh, if we don't repeal it, it will allow the Russians and the Chinese to come in and do what they will with our internet. So it's a national security thing. So it needs to be rejected in this defense bill. Huh? I mean, it's just a bridge too far. But how this is addressed and disposed over the next couple of days is going to be fascinating. And it does pit the Senate Republicans against the president. And you got to wonder, for instance, what the senators in Georgia, the Republican senators in Georgia, will do with all this. I mean, it's a lot of interesting stuff here. There's no question about it. Okay, let's move on, though, to our next subject, which is an equally fascinating one. This is just right up, you know, in the American way. I mean, it's just, you know, it's sort of one of these great issues, which is, can companies require employees to get vaccinated against COVID-19? The short answer is yes. The long answer is not necessarily. Javier, right?
Right. The short answer being yes, the federal government cannot do so, but there are myriad ways in which your state and local government can, as well as your employer. Now, the employers are granted under the law broad leeway to ensure that their workplaces are safe for people to come in. And that means that if there is a disease afoot, they can say, okay, and order a lot of us that have been working from home. There's a lot open question about when or whether we will be able to return to the offices. And one of the caveats is when it's certified that you're not infectious or not susceptible, at least, to COVID-19. So there are ways legally under the law, with some exceptions having to do with religious or beliefs or personal beliefs or so forth, but your employer can do that. Also, states on that level, like your school districts, can obviously, as all of us that have ever attended public school, there are a series of shots and vaccinations that are required. So in a similar vein, there are ways in which the government, as well as your employer, can make the path to your resisting being resistant or hesitant to taking a vaccine very, very narrow. So in that regard, Chipotle the other day, or on Tuesday rather, said that it would not require, but will quote unquote strongly encourage its employees to do so. So this also is reminiscent of something that happened in Virginia. The government there initially said that they would in fact require every citizen in Virginia, they would mandate the vaccine for everyone there. So there are a lot of ways in which this plays directly to what we are seeing increasingly is a resistance amongst the public to take the vaccine because it's experimental, it's unproven. It was, you know, a very rapid development process, and we in fact beat history in a lot of ways. But that is, on the other hand, is making a number of people really question whether or not this is safe. A lot of our hopes for 2021 are contingent upon the wide mass inoculation of the public. And a lot of that is built under the assumption that people will actually willingly take it. And there's a big fight about who gets it first. But there are a lot of people who are, in fact, in line to get it first who don't really want it. So, you know, all of this says that perhaps some of our expectations about 2021 in terms of growth, in terms of the public's willingness to take the vaccine, may be a bit too rosy. I think that we're maybe underestimating what is in fact a very deep-seated resistance to people subjecting themselves to take a vaccine that, you know, again, was, while, you know, a miracle of modern technology and science and a triumph, really, has people worried about the longer term effects.
You know, Javier, I think going back to what Chipotle CEO Brian Nichol had told CNBC on Tuesday about the company, quote, strongly encouraging employees receive the vaccine rather than mandating it, really comes back to, for the company, it comes back to a liability perspective. And I think a lot of these private companies are going to err on the side of caution and choose not to make this a mandate because of the potential lawsuits and liabilities if any employees develop complications linked to the vaccine. Now, that said, complications have not been a widespread issue as yet, and more than 1 million first doses of the vaccine have already been distributed in the U.S. as of Wednesday. So, of course, that's not enough to confer herd immunity, but still a pretty significant initial phase of the vaccine rollout is already underway here. But still, at the same time, Javier, to your point, it really does raise the question of, you know, what does this mean for those employees who refuse to get the vaccine? And at what point are employers going to start bringing larger cohorts of workers back to work? And how are they going to segment them away so that they aren't potentially a threat to others or to themselves in the event that they aren't inoculated? So I think these are a lot of civil rights as well as workplace rights to consider here. And definitely a debate that we'll keep talking about for the next few months.
No doubt, Emily. And with all the numbnuts out there saying, oh, you know, you can't make me. It's the American way. Great. But I think what's going to happen is they're all going to be like what the CEO of Chipotle said, which is, we strongly urge you to take it to get the vaccine, but we're just going to leave it at that. Let's move on to another subject, near and dear to my heart, because I just am fascinated by this stuff, which is a mega feud because they're mega companies. That is the animosity that exists publicly between Facebook and Apple. And it has to do with the business models. And they're, as I said, pretty upfront about this. I'm not sure to what end, but Emily, it's out there, right?
It is. And I think what's interesting is that this is just such a longstanding feud that exists between two of the largest tech companies in the US. I mean, this really goes back to as long as like a decade ago. I mean, we've had Apple CEO Tim Cook continuously really saying that Facebook perhaps should not necessarily be using user data and monetizing its company via advertising in a way that really allows it to have these very deep troves of information on their users. And of course, Facebook has hit back against Apple for its own business model. It's gone ahead and defended its own practices as well and said that it isn't necessarily the bad guy in the room here. But I think from both of their perspectives, you know, it's easy for them from their vantage points to point fingers at the other. I mean, from Apple's perspective, much and at least half of its revenue still comes from the hardware side of the equation here. I mean, yes, it is starting to become more of a recurring services and recurring revenue type company. But at the same time, there's nothing to lose here for Tim Cook or for Apple to necessarily slam Facebook over what are already very public issues around its privacy concerns. So long-standing feud here, quite a few jabs coming from both Tim Cook and Mark Zuckerberg, and something that is likely to continue here between these two tech giants.
I think you're right. You know, when these big companies take these disputes public, it's sort of, it's fascinating, but it's also sort of interesting, and you wonder why they do it. And so Apple right now, as you point out, you know, locking horns not only with Facebook, but also a little bit with Tesla and Elon Musk, and mostly it's just Musk saying he wouldn't take the meeting with me. Well, it's a little, I don't really see that as being a huge fight, but the battle with Facebook is a different matter. And Facebook is actually isolated in the sense that it's not really particularly liked by really any of the other Silicon Valley giants, in particular Salesforce. And Mark Benioff has been extremely outspoken and critical of Facebook calling their business, the new tobacco and that kind of thing. But, you know, and Apple and Google have had a longstanding, it was friendly and then became less friendly. So, you know, at the very best, they're frenemies, and at the worst, they're enemies. And it's important because, you know, they're the most powerful companies on the planet. So we're going to be continuing to talk about Apple and Facebook and how they get along or don't get along, and vaccines and whether or not people are going to take them and what that means for business, no doubt, is another subject we're going to be watching over the next several months and going on well into 2021, no doubt about that. And finally, this Washington drama with the president and the defense bill and stimulus is going to be top of mind as we head into Christmas and then New Year's and the holiday season. This is the Market Wake Up by Yahoo Finance. I'm Andy Serwer, along with Javier David and Emily McCormick. Have a great day.